You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Bigi on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
That's right, all over the World Wide Web, 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that Listen Live button and get us live on any one of your listening devices. Or the archives of the shows are on demand, so you can select by date. And of course, once we get all the shows, we have we put it on our websites and also on all of our social media, which is under SitaMediaInc.com is the website. And then our social media pages are either under Sita's personal page, Sita Durgin Bigi,
yeah,
or under Sita Media, or Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. So we got it. I think we're covered.
That's right.
We're everywhere. That's right. We're all over the world.
We're all over the place,
right?
That's right.
And downloadable.
And it's so good to be back in the seat here at the Viewpoint.
We missed you last week.
Well, yeah, I missed you guys too, but I was too busy partying.
Guys, we saw.
As you could see, we had a 4-day Hindu wedding.
I love it.
And it was awesome. I had a great time. And I know Martha was here and Anne, right? Who was in last year? Seniors.
It was Jennifer Barton.
Jennifer Barton, shout out to seniors helping Cedars, and Martha is back with us.
Right.
And you know, the universe is lined up so well that Martha is back today for a show that we're going to be speaking with the Fair Start Movement people, and she was here last time as well. So for our listeners who are tuning in, on Mondays we sit here and we talk about kitchen table topics. We talk to people in and around our state, people right here locally in Brevard County, Florida. And we speak with people worldwide, and we always say that our show is very fun, it's interesting, unscripted, and I tell you, Ellen, we give out a lot of valuable information. Today's no different. Ali Tamper is here.
Hi.
Our resident guest is here. Ellen O'Neill, my right hand, who's been with me for 14 years, is here on the show as well. And Martha is joining us, Dr. Martha Watts. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Yes, it's so good to be here once again.
It is our last show for 2023, and not only did I dance a lot, but I shouted a lot.
Oh, dear.
Because, you know, with 18 brothers and sisters and umpteen nieces and nephews and everyone trying to find everyone, it's a lot. So I'm glad to be back.
Right. Well, and the pictures were beautiful, and I love Hindu weddings because of the fanfare and because of the traditions. Over 4 days, I was sort of looking up all of the different garb and all of the things that you had for each one of the days, and it was just amazing. Just like, and to see you and your brothers and sisters together was really cool too.
Well, God is good, right?
Amen.
And it's all about all of us collectively doing what we can to leave a good footprint behind, not just for the next generation, but for our grandchildren as well. And I tell you, it worries me a lot. As we go into 2024, I am hoping and praying that Americans who are worried about things like inflation and healthcare affordability and partisan cooperation and drug addiction and gun violence, that we here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends could lend our voice to those ears who are willing to listen and say, hey, we care about all these things as well, going into 2024. But before we do that, Ellen, there's something that's near and dear to me. I am one of the board members on Fair Start, and I had called our friend Carter Dillard and asked him to call in today because I think what they're doing for children all over the world is remarkable. In our second segment, we're going to have one of our friends, Mr. Michael Dobson. He's going to be calling in the second segment. But I think we're having the phone, someone from Fair Start. Carter couldn't call in himself, so he outsourced that job to, I think, a Maswagi Robert.
Right.
And Ashley Burke, who lives locally here in Satellite in Blake, Washington, near me. So who's on the phone right now? We are trying to figure out who's on the phone.
Yes, on the phone, we are on the conference, and Ashley is on Rhine, and I'm also on Rhine. This is Message Robert from Uganda.
Yes, well, welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with Fair Start.
Yes, I'm happy to meet you all, to talk to you all this afternoon. I'm Message Robert from Uganda, a founder, a CEO of Rejoice Africa Foundation, a non-profit organization registered in Uganda to operate in climate restoration, sanitation and hygiene, and health for all. Me and Kata, we have been working together in restoring the rights of children in Africa, and we started a project together called the Cities for the Future, where we do agroforestry to plant trees, fruit trees for these children who are malnourished, to get fruit trees and nutrition from those trees. And we help them to restore the climate, absorb the carbon emission from the air, and we also do children savings account, where we save for children, where we do wealth balance. The wealth people, they balance their wealth through saving for the children. We opened children saving account in a recognized institution in Uganda, and me and Kata, we have been helping to save for these children up to now, so that they can have their basic needs in place, so that also these parents, they can also plan to have children in the right time when they have their basic needs. And that is, we have also worked together to file the petition in the UN on children, about the children rights, with Qatar Fair Start. And we have also helped to do kitchen garden, where we help these children to have their kitchen garden, to have their vegetables planted, to get the money to save for their children.
Robert, it's a pleasure to have you take the time to call in all the way from Uganda. And you're absolutely correct. We just before we started our show, we were talking about the children, not just the children in the United States, but children all over the world. And we do know that Fair Start, the movement itself, was founded by a group of individuals, Carter Dillard himself and so many of us, who care deeply about children and democracy, and we care about the natural world and the future for the children. But I think what you're saying is you're trying your best to educate people, because I think education is key, not just to how we treat children and who should have children and when is the right time to have children, but also so that all children are treated equally. And I think what you're saying is you are doing your part in Uganda through what you've learned from Fair Start Movement to make sure that children, there's equity in what you're doing, there's equality in what you're doing, there's inclusion in what you're doing. Who else is involved in helping you in Uganda in what you're doing?
We are doing this with the help of the women care groups, and those women care groups, they are helping us to reach to the community at the grassroots communities, and also the government of Uganda, like the NGO Bureau, has helped us to get registered and also to start operating legally in the Republic of Uganda.
So is Ashley on the phone with you? I'm not sure if you were able to conference her in at all.
Yes.
Oh, hi. Hi, Ash. How are you?
Hi,
I'm so glad you were able to
great.
Get in. And
so great to join you.
Thank you. So give our listeners a little background about yourself as well. You and I are both part of Fair Start, and I absolutely love this movement and what they stand for.
Sorry, I'm just changing rooms right here.
Yes, I've been part of the Fair Start movement for about 5 years now, because I believe that everyone should be born with a fair start in life. We should be welcomed into families where parents are ready, and into environments where they're going to be healthy, and that includes both socially and environmentally. And so right now we are actually filing a complaint with the UN because world leaders have failed to allow for children to be born into their healthy, equitable, and safe conditions. And we've seen that just this past week with the COP28 conference, where not only have the COP28 leaders failed to meet obligations that will keep children in the next generation and future generations safe and healthy in a habitable world, but they're continuing to put wealth and fossil fuels and profits before the welfare of all of the planet's inhabitants, including children. And it's something that needs to be addressed, as the media, for the most part, has been praising that conference for coming to an agreement at the last hour, at the 11th hour of the conference. But that agreement falls so terribly short of what's needed to protect children and the future generations.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is? It's interesting, like, you watch the photo ops coming out of that conference, that so many people, they say they care about what happens to children. But at the heart of the matter is governments all over the world have failed the children. All of us care about human rights, and all of us care about birth control. We care about educating men and women about birth control, when to have children, reproductive rights, reproductive organs, and all this stuff. But unfortunately, so many governments all over the world are failing. I don't understand so many that care about a pregnant woman, but then when the child is born, the child has been born into an environment where there is not a Fair Housing Act. There is not food. There is no health care. There is no hope. And I see Ali is shaking her head here in affirmative. Take it. You could jump in right there, Ali.
Yeah, I was thinking you're listing off those kinds of things, and it's schooling and education. And then what happens to that child when they get to an age where they can reproduce? You know, do they have that education? Do they know what it may help them make a good decision? And that's exciting that this is a group that works with that.
Right.
And what I loved about this movement, even from the very beginning, from this particular year that when we had them on first, they kind of shifted the focus of family planning to include the future of the child. So, like, family planning has always been about birth control and, you know, abstinence or, you know, in those things. But family planning and the movement really is about, all right, now the whole family is together. Now we're in a situation that we really have to think about. We got 9 months to think about how we're going to take care of this child and let it be born in an equal environment and hopefully maybe hedge a little bit of the poverty that they might be born into ahead of time, correct? Like, is that what you're, Ashley, right?
Absolutely. It's about planning before the child is even an idea.
Yeah, right, and having the community.
So that parents are prepared, that they're delaying parenthood until they're financially and emotionally ready and have that support system in place.
Right, and you wonder, Ash.
Yeah, prior to the thing.
Right, and Robert, you wonder why all over the world people don't talk about universal family policies, right? You wonder why people don't talk about the redistribution of wealth. You wonder why governments all over the world shy away from talking about how to have these policies in place where people can have a basic income. So that if it's really about the children should not be born into an environment where they are so poor that we see child labor on the rise. We see children taking care of children. What can we do, Robert? And I know you're calling in from Uganda. So talk to us a little bit about the redistribution and what can happen in those countries.
Yes. So thank you very much about the discussion about the distribution of wealth. What I have realized and what I have seen, there is a centralized system whereby these people, the politicians and the governments, when the funds from the global north comes, they tend to use it in a central part, and children who are affected by the challenges of climate, by the challenges, they continue going through the same challenges and they don't get the funds to the downer part. So I would like to suggest if we can do the decentralized part where the funds from the wealthy people can go directly to these children, to these parents who are going to have their birth of their children basing on what they have on their account, not to give birth basing on the children or family planning on the parents. So that's what I can say.
Yes, yes. So Ashley, talk to us a little bit about the petition.
Connected due to insufficient credit on your account.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I wish I could.
So calling in from Uganda is a little expensive, I would imagine.
It sure is.
And thank you so much, Robert. If you're still on the line, thank you so much for calling
in. Ashley, are you still on the phone?
Yes.
Yes. So Ashley, I want you to talk to us a little bit, if you can, about the petition. And, you know, this is the year, I think 2024, of children getting involved in the climate change in the world. Oftentimes, the adults try to sweep this under the rug. But I think children are beginning to see that this is their future, the next generation, the climate change, what's happening with everything that we see from the storms to what's happening with tsunamis. We see what's happening. Oh, my goodness.
That's probably her calling back.
That's fine. But, Ellen, you know, this is hard having a call from overseas in Uganda.
It's always a little challenging.
But it's nice, like Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Wouldn't you say with Dr. Martha Watts, it's kind of interesting to have callers from all over the world that care about the same things. We talk about climate change, but oftentimes the children's voices are not heard. Go ahead, one of those. Yeah.
One of those days, I looked at someone, it was a child who was in the UN, actually just speaking, addressing the United Nations and letting them understand that what you all are doing, you're messing up life for myself and for those of us who are about to come up. And a lot of times, it's just what bothers me is the idea that we would make things like climate change become a political position rather than a policy that needs to be addressed.
Right.
And that is the sad part for me, because it shouldn't be, you know, cutting down trees or driving cars that make, you know, it shouldn't be a political issue. It should be something that's something that we need to take care of.
Right. And the thing is, it all starts at home, right? Everything about the climate, from when we talk about here, about the Indian River Lagoon, and we talk about taking care of things at home, and we talk about driving cars, we talk about going overseas. I was just in Trinidad. People don't run their air conditioning 24/7. We ate at the wedding on leaves. Think about that for a second. We implemented whatever we can from childhood. People make brooms out of coconut trees. It's nature. Nature gives us enough. We don't have to, like you say, interfere with the environment and cause such havoc and inequality all over the world. And I think Ashley's back on. So Ashley, talk to us a little bit about the petition that was just submitted to the UN.
Yes, we actually filed an amendment to update it earlier this year, because it is now time for the world to do something that is actually going to make a difference for children and future generations, and that is part of a larger loss and damages fund. And that's something they discussed and decided to move forward with at last year's conference, but nothing really has come to fruition from there. And so the Fair Start movement is making a claim to the UN that world governments and world leaders have a responsibility and a duty to pay loss and damages to children and the next generations who are going to be harmed by the climate and inequality crises. simultaneously and to pay those reparations through family planning investments.
Yeah. And, you know, we all talk about, you know, I hear so much talk about borders. You know, people talk about people coming into the country and immigration and illegal immigration. And we focus on human bodies, but we don't focus on the right things. I think climate change is something that everyone should be concerned about, not just us at Fair Start, but it's almost like it's a universal human right to be concerned about climate change. Why do you think so many politicians sweep this under the rug?
We know the answer to that, that we have the research and decades of evidence of failed attempts by governments and world leaders, and we know that what they are doing, that they are hiding under the rug, is that they are putting profits before human and animal and environmental lives. That is what it is. All come down to, and that's what the Fair Start movement is here for, is to tell that truth and to expose that.
Yeah. So when we talk about Fair Start, right, it's so cultural as well, right? Because when you're educated and you have a child, whether you're educated at home or at school or in the church or in the community, wherever it is, normally if you have a child, you would want that child to have an education. You would want that child to live in a world that is free of harm. You would want that child to live in a safe environment, to have a functioning school. You would want that child to have a library. You would want that child to grow up and be a human being that's able to give back to the society in which he or she lives in. Where have we gone wrong in the world that so many children are going to bed hungry? So many children are living in war-torn areas. So many children are being human trafficked. What is happening, you think, Ashley, in a world that politicians, they meet at all these summits, they meet at all these, you know, you'll hear people meeting in Saudi Arabia, you'll hear them meeting in the United Nations, but yet still, children and child rights is not being taken care of.
Absolutely. And really, it comes back to these antiquated patriarchal systems, excuse me, that are pushing for higher birth rates because they really just want more consumers. They don't actually care about children. They just want more people to buy more products and consume more things. And that has been the foundation of the climate crisis and the social inequality crisis and every other problem that we're facing today, is because governments pushed for people to have more births rather than investing in them so that they had quality education, quality health care, and quality birth conditions.
Right.
To have greater improved life outcomes.
But I want to go back to like what you always talk about, Sita, like living in a village in Trinidad, right? The community kind of took care of each other. Like my community, when I grew up, I mean, I was just as scared of my friends' parents as I was of my own. And one of the things that I love about the Fair Start, I remember reading this back in January, I actually pulled it up so I had it right. Fair Start family planning means smaller families sharing resources to invest more in every child. So the topic itself, the communities ensure that parents have the resources to plan families and to have a community type of a base. I've said for a long time, when I came back from Canada, you said the same, that there's a lot of community gardens in Canada where people, you know, groups of families go and share plots of land to grow food so that they can all be taken care of, so that those resources are all there. And every time I think of Fair Start planning, I think about that. Yes, we certainly need our governments to be paying attention and fix some of this. But we have the ability, and what I always feel Fair Start does is that we have the ability to create resources amongst ourselves in our smaller pods, if you will, to at least maybe fix a few blocks and then fix a city and then fix a state and then fix a country, right? So at least this way we have a good, Fair Start is a great model for people to look at and figure out how to start this in their own community to make sure that at least the children in their communities, if they have been prejudiced or discriminated against in any way, inequality of anything.
Equity, right?
That way they were all right. Taken care
but,
of.
But Ashley, I think one of the things that Fair Start talks about, and one of the things that bothers me a lot, is the human reproductive system and human rights for women, reproductive rights for women as well. What can we do at Fair Start to ensure that all women, all girls of childbearing age, are able to have a right to their bodies and if they should reproduce or not? Because once you reproduce and you have a child, then you become a consumer. And you have to have whatever means necessary to live. So Fair Start is saying that before you bring a child into the world, you have to think about it. But I'm asking, how can we ensure that humans, women, have that right for their reproductive system?
Yes, definitely. And that's a very difficult question to answer. But we have to recognize and remember that the decision whether to have children, when to have children, and how many children to have is a human right. And the rights of children override all other rights.
Right.
So protecting reproductive rights is fundamental to giving children a fair start in life.
Right. And you know what? We talk about population growth, and we talk about increasing the birth rate in the United States. But you don't hear people talking about the right of a child, whether that child is born in a marriage or out of a marriage, single mom, adopted, in vitro, whatever. What is it about human beings that when you, the minute you start talking about the right of this child that's going to be born or already born, why is it that our society clams up and they turn their head because it's like children should be seen, not heard? So at Fair Start, we're saying we are the voice of the children. So talk to us a little bit about what is it about children's rights that so many people, politicians included, don't care about?
That's a difficult question to answer. I'm not even sure why some people would not put children's rights before anything else. I think if you ask some politicians or some corporations who have a hand in influencing politics, they might tell you something that is not something you'd want to hear. Maybe Moshe can add to that.
Yeah, because, you know, we all talk about the rights of children. We all talk about, you know, what we should or should not do. We watch what's happening in the Brevard school system with children being told you can't read a book. We watch what's going on with Medicaid when they drop children off the roll. We watch what's going on with children when a parent don't have the funds, the resources, send a kid to college. And then that kid joins the armed forces, the military, the Air Force, whatever. But all of these things is tied into how a child is raised. Who's raising the child? Are there sufficient funds? Are there people for guidance? Are there people to help in the foundation of this child? And I think this is where Fair Start comes in handy and saying, before you have this child, you should be thinking about all these things. Am I correct?
Definitely. And that's the point that you bring up about the local situation with the schools, because we've been noticing that some of that conversation ends up delving into parents' rights, which again ignores children's rights, because children are not property.
Right. Well, there it is. You know, it's like everyone is talking around the children, but not to the children. And I think Robert is back on the phone. Robert, are you back on the call? I'm not sure.
Yes. I think you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you. We're going to give you a couple more minutes. We wanted to ask you, talk to us a little bit about the educational system for children in where you're at in Uganda.
Here in Uganda, what we do, the education system, the children go to school with the scholastic materials, and the parents, they are the ones to pay the school fees for their children. And in this case, you find some children, they don't have parents, and they don't have those parents. Some parents produce very many children, and you find these children, they are not going to school because of lack of scholastic materials and school fees, and they end up failing to go to school, That's why you hear that in the Global South we are poor, because these children, they are not going to school and they start doing what we call child labor. And in child labor, you find they are also going to produce when they are still young. That's why I and Fairstart, we are trying to sensitize these parents to produce children when they are ready to care for their basic needs.
Yeah, and you know, in many countries, having children is like, people love, they have their children and they think of it as they're multiplying to keep the family. It's a cultural thing. So do you find in Uganda, when you talk about the Fair Start movement, when you try to educate people why they should have a child, if they should have a child, are they prepared to have a child? Do they have the socioeconomic means to have a child? Do you get any pushback there, Mr. Robert?
Yes, in Uganda, parents, they are accepting the concept of Fairstart because they have been going through the burdens of caring for many children, and now they are now starting to accept the concept of Fairstart when we are talking to them.
Yeah, because Fair Start, what it does, just in the word itself, and I think Martha could jump in here, the word fear itself, F-A-I-R, it means giving every child equal opportunity, equal access to healthcare, equal access to education, equal access to a warm bed at night, equal access to learning and growing. And it really boggles my mind why so many people try to run our world. They run for political office, but they don't understand that at the end of the day, it is about the children. It is about the world we're going to leave behind. Martha, take it.
And, you know, if I wonder about the politicians as well. I want to know if they are, you know, connecting the puzzle. So, for example, we have that fight over a right to bear a child. So, right now, we're like, okay, we do not want any woman to, you know, terminate a child.
A pregnancy
before, you know, all of those things. But at the same time, we are still fighting about making provisions for that child when they come. A parent still has to struggle so hard to find, you know, help for school. You know, we have those, those early childhood education. And parents have to lie sometimes to get those extra help that they need to have to be able to afford daycare for their kids. But yet still, you know, we have a problem if, you know, situations happen where they have to do other things. So I'm thinking that they need to put the puzzle together.
Right.
If we want to make sure that we want every child to be born when they, you know, whether the situation is, you know, dire or not, why don't we have that same fervor for making sure that we have everything prepared for them when they are born?
Right.
And that's the problem I have.
Right.
Let's make sure that every child can have that child
access,
care. Every parent can have
to live, to be able to live.
Everything. I
access
think we
life.
Should have.
And yeah,
yes, a fair start.
It.
And so for me, it's okay if you are saying that you want to have that fervor about life. I think it shouldn't end with birth. After that child is born, you should have the same fervor to make sure that we have provided everything you need until you become that 18-year-old.
Right,
where
that
you can.
Passion. Because you know what happens when
yes.
children have no hope?
Yes.
They turn to drugs. They have mentors that are there just for exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
Child labor, human child trafficking,
mm-hmm.
Prostitution. When people have no hope, they turn to violence at sometimes too, you know.
Exactly.
And I think that's what happens in so many countries all over the world. So Ashley, are you still on the call, Ash?
Yeah.
You know, talk to us a little bit. I know one of the things that Carter and I had spoken about, and I'll just give you an extra few minutes because we have to go into our other segment, but talk to us about the basic human income. And of course, people have the right to refuse it if they don't want it, but do you think that would help children in so many parts of, let's say, the United States?
Yes, so that's actually universal basic income, I think is what you're referring to.
Yes.
That has been tested in a few communities across the U.S., and it's showing very positive results. And that's one of the ways that we can invest in children from birth, the first 5 years of life, and ensure that they're going to be set up for success
throughout their lifetime, because obviously we know the first 5 years are the most formative and have impact on lifelong outcomes.
Okay. So before we go off air, can you give us the website, Ashley, for Fair Start Movement, where someone can go and see the petitions and see all the great work that the Fair Start people are doing to promote democracy and a fair start for children and our future, and how to save our natural world, save our planet, so that the next generation could enjoy it and not have all these climate crises that we see now. Give us that website, please.
Yes, we hope everyone will head over to the Fair Start fairstartmovement.org, and we have a Take Actions page where you can see all of the actions that we're working on.
Right. And Mr. Robert Maswagi, can you give us your website for the foundation that you have in Uganda that helps to spread the knowledge about Fair Start?
Well, the website that I have is havingkids.org. That is a great website. It's very navigable.
Fair Start. Remember, we no longer say Having Kids, we say Fair Start.
Okay, but that's their domain name.
Ashley, do you have the website for Roberts Maswagi?
It's rafug.org.
Okay, because we no longer use Having Kids, correct? We use Fair Start.
That's the old URL. It's fairstartmovement.org.
Yeah. Well, Ashley, I just wanted to thank you for getting me involved with Fair Start as well, because the more I think about it and the more I travel the world and I see the advantages and disadvantages of the haves and the have-nots, and the inequality of wealth and the distribution of the wealth, it really questions my mind as to what is our role here on the planet. Why are we put on the planet, and what are we all doing individually to make the world a better place, not just now, for the next generation?
Definitely, and we're so honored to have you, Sita, to have you on the board, having so many diverse voices as part of the Fair Start movement, including yourself and Moise Robert. His organization is the Rejoice Africa Foundation. So if anyone wants to go and check out the work that they're doing over there and their Seeds for the Future campaign, it's really incredible work, and we're so honored to be part of both of it.
Well, we will make sure we share all of this great information today. Thank you so much, Ashley and Robert, for being with us and talking about the Fair Start movement. Sita, we're going to take a quick break and listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free: the delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome to MedFast Urgent Care. We are Brevard County's largest urgent care network. MedFast is now open at 7:30 a.m. every day. That's right, 7:30 a.m. every day. We will get you in and out so you can get back to your day. When you are sick or injured, MedFast is here for you 7 days a week. Think fast, think MedFast. With 18 locations, there's a MedFast near you. Call 321-MEDFAST.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole
located
staples,
in Titusville,
well
Florida.
Call
Financial Crossroads has been serving accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're sitting here with Ellen O'Neill, Ali Tambor, and our friend Martha Watts. And what a great first segment about Fair Start, Miss Ellen.
Yes, absolutely. It was a fantastic show. Make sure you check out the website and all of the great information that we share on our website pages.
That's right. And our second caller is in.
Mr.
Michael Dobson is on. And you know what? It's amazing the amount of wonderful friends we've had with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And when we get in a pinch, we could call on our friends to fill that segment. So, Mr. Dobson, you are calling in from Tallahassee, Florida. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
I'm Michael Dobson. I'm here in Tallahassee, Florida. I'm the owner of Dobson, Craig & Associates, and I've been involved with legislative lobbying, political consulting, and association management for the last almost 30 years. We oversee the Dream Foundation and other nonprofits. For many years, actually, we oversaw all the food banks around the state of Florida. So I'm very engaged in Florida politics. I'm at the Capitol whenever those guys are in town, and we have a pretty interesting year coming up.
Interesting. I tell you, that's a good way of putting it. So we just spoke a little bit. I don't know if you heard the first segment with Fair Start, but we were talking about children and the rights of children and the inherent right of all of us to leave a better planet behind. And I have to tell you, I've been speaking to people. Of course, you know, I'm a political junkie, and we're going into 2024. It's a Christmas season, and a lot of people are just not feeling it. A lot of people feel as though if baby Jesus himself was here, he'd be looking for a daycare, and they can't find workers for it. You know? So here's the thing. People are worried about inflation. They're worried about healthcare affordability, partisan corporation, drug addiction, gun violence. What do we do moving forward in our country, especially for the one about partisan cooperation? And you've been in Tallahassee a lot. You watch a lot of this stuff. What can we do to tell our listeners to say, hold on a minute, there's hope on the horizon?
Well, what I would say is, and I would ask every voter, frankly, to communicate with their elected official in Tallahassee to kind of remind them of what's important. Because for the last year, as you know, a lot of political reasons, mainly political, in terms of someone's political ambitions, we were focused on a lot of cultural issues and a lot of other things, while we were not paying attention to things that really mattered. Like in Florida, obviously we have the issue of homeowners insurance and drug addiction, and we just have so many things. And I think that a lot of us is just really just too much, because these things are staring us in the eye every day, but we're not really doing anything about them, not in a real way. We're focused on division, more so than healing. We're focused on those issues
that divides, the culture wars. Actually, it divides.
Right.
I mean, nobody cares what you do in the privacy of your own home. You do it, but you don't have to broadcast it to the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people felt as though Democrats were too concerned about the culture wars. Because when you speak to people today, you have folks who are having children, and they take the kids to a daycare, and there are no workers in that daycare. And if they are workers, they're highly stressed out. They don't have enough help. So I think we need to bring it back center to what people are really concerned about. Folks are concerned about Medicaid expansion and if their kid got dropped off the Medicaid roll or not. I mean, how when you're talking to people, how do you address these issues? Because this is where, not just Democrats, but Republicans too, this is where people should be focused on, is the life of the family, the health of the family. Family issues, no pun intended, it trumps everything else.
I agree. And those family issues are something that And I would say this, the Democrats, in my view, have struggled for many years to talk about family in a way that most of us think of our families. I mean, we have to get away, again, from the cultural issues and talk about those things that we all share. You know, at the end of the day, what we find is that we all care about most of the same things until some politician tries to divide us. We all want our kids to be healthy and safe, and we all want the next generation to be better, you know, better than ours. We care about our spouses. We care about our church. We care about the same things. When I'm going at a convenience store, and I'm walking up, and some guy or a woman holds the door behind them, they're not thinking about my political affiliation or anything of that nature, that we're all really decent people. But we let this division happen, and it's done on purpose, you know, because somebody decided that's how they're going to get folks out to vote. But what we have to do is that we have to say, no, we want you to talk about the things that really matter. We want you to talk about those things that impact my life day to day.
I think it's too many internal rifts caused by people on both sides who make a lot of noise. For example, even when they started talking about the books and the schools, what should have happened was people just sit down and say, hey, let me see that book. Let me read a couple of lines in it and see if I agree with it or not. But instead, we had people on both sides just, you know, carrying on like crazy about these books. But if you sit down and you talk to people, you'll find out that all of us care about our children having appropriate materials in their grade. All of us care about age-appropriate materials. All of us human beings who have children, we want the best for our children, and we want it to be age-appropriate. So I don't understand why certain issues became such hot topics in both parties, and it's almost like it was a civil war brewing over these books and who's going to be reading them and who's going to be banning them. What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, it would be a part of a larger conversation, but I would say I too question all of a sudden, forever. Things have been moving forward with public education, and I come from an era where I come from a Jim Crow South. I was born in 1958, so I see how far we've come in terms of being this melting pot that we all talk about. I have kids who are in their early 20s. I see how they relate to their friends, and the world is much better, but the world is also browning as well, some people are afraid of what our country is becoming, as this melting pot that we all talked about 20 years ago. But once it's here, fear came into play with some folks, and some politician wanted to use that, so again, it's going to be us as voters having to push back and remind them of the things, that's important, because you're right. We all care about what our kids are reading in school and et cetera, but that's never really been a problem. But most of the things that we get is for political expediency. And I'll tell you another problem. For instance, I don't know how much time you spend in Tallahassee, but there used to be something called a Florida Press Center. It's a three-story building a couple of blocks from the Capitol. It used to be filled with newspaper journalists from all over the state. Even your college newspapers around the state of Florida had someone with an office there in the Florida Press Center. Guess what? There's no newspaper journalist anymore. Okay?
Yeah.
There's probably about four reporters who cover the news in the Florida legislature. They write for both the St. Pete Times and they write for Miami Herald. Orlando Sentinel, I think they have one person. The point I'm making is that communication is easily manipulated now because of what has happened to journalism and what has happened to the press in general. And the internet, while we thought it was this great thing, what we may learn is that it's not really the friend we thought it was going to be. You know, so what it's doing a pretty good job at is separating us. It's a good method for getting people who hate people together. The technology is really great at that. Social media is great at that. So we just kind of live in this very interesting time when we as individuals are going to have to figure out, you know, how to reclaim our autonomy, from the technology, from all those things, and from the clickbait and all this stuff that we're bombarded with, so that we can kind of look at things with fresh eyes and remember what's important and let our leaders know what's important.
Well, it's almost like what you're saying is people have to go back to the foundation of how this country was built, right? Family.
Right.
It comes down to, you know, even if you can't sit and have a dinner every night with your family, have a Sunday meal and talk about issues. Talk about your mortgage interest rate. Talk about your car payments. Talk about who's watching your kids. Talk about who is offering guidance to the young people. Talk, because like you say, if you don't, you're going to get the information on the internet. Now, the internet was good during COVID. We saw teachers using the internet to teach kids. And I think it all comes back down to parenting. Like the people of Fair Start were saying, know if you want to have a kid before you have a kid or not, because then you could invest the time, energy, and resources into that child to make them a great citizen. So, you know, what I think too is people are not talking to each other enough about the importance of registering to vote. Did you check your registration card? Do you know where your precinct is? What is your plan? You may not like everything about President Biden or whoever is going to be the Republican nominee, but you still got to vote, because when you wake up in the morning, your health care, your environmental issues, your children's school, where you work, the roads you drive on, all these things impact you as a person. So what is it about the state of Florida that people don't get? Because we saw so many people, we saw dismal showing at the polls from both sides in the last election.
Well, I think what's happening, not just in Florida, but around the nation, people are, this may sound weird, but people are actually afraid to vote. Some people are. I attended a committee meeting last legislative session when they were debating the election bill that eventually passed and was signed by the governor. And then there's one piece of the bill that I actually stood up and spoke to, and what it was there's a piece of the bill that says that from now on, your voter's ID card will come with somewhat of a disclaimer. And that disclaimer would simply say that this card doesn't mean that you're actually eligible to vote. And I talked about how proud I was to vote for the first time at the age of 18 in Polk County, and you know how much pride I had in that. And what you're doing, you're taking that away, and then you have the election integrity force or whatever it's called. You know, there are people who are going to be literally afraid to vote. Because your voter's registration card is no longer the final arbiter as to whether or not you're eligible to vote. What we have is we have politicians picking voters. I'll give you a good example. And recently in Orlando, one of the largest cities in Florida, they elected their mayor in an off-year election this year. And that election, I think, was in September, I believe it was. Why would a city that size have a mayoral election at a time when they know voters are really going to go out and vote? On December 9th, the largest city in the country, Houston, Texas, held their mayoral campaign on December 9th. Okay? I can't tell you how few people vote, maybe 20%, if that.
Yeah, I saw that. It was horrible. But, you know, I implore people who are listening to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and listening to Mr. Michael Dobson speak that all of us, it is our responsibility not to talk about things, but to actually make it happen. Because so many people, they say, oh, I don't like what's happening in my job. I don't like what's happening with interest rate. My insurance rates went up. Well, nothing happens if you don't vote. And I'll let Allie jump in here really quick. She's shaking her head.
I spend quite a bit of time online looking, trying to find the stances of the different people that are running for office. That's a key piece to that puzzle before you go vote willy-nilly. If you vote with a little bit of education in your under your belt to figure out who first. And I also found I went to renew my voter's registration card, and nowhere on the website could I find how to vote by mail. They've tucked it away or hidden it or something. So there are some areas where we've got to work on it.
Yeah. Ms. Ellen, yeah. I'm telling you, we have work to do.
And we do.
Ms. And Michael, I'd like for you to call in again another time. We only have a minute left. Ellen's going to jump in here really
quick.
Yeah,
just really quickly, I just want to give a plug for the League of Women Voters, where you can go and find out about all of the, not just the candidates that are coming up, but you're going to find out about the bills as well
and
explain it very well.
And 2024 is coming. We will not be live next week. We're going to do a rerun. But I just want to say to everyone who supports Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, and thank you all for doing your part to make the United States of America a better place and make our world a better place. And that includes you, Mr. Michael Dobson, as well. You have been such a great friend and supporter of the show. And that's why I wanted to let you call in today, the last day of the year for us. What would you like to say to our listeners and to your friends as well?
Okay. I just want to say Merry Christmas, everybody. And please, let's think about how we can go into this next year a kinder nation. And kinder to each other, and to realize how much more in common that we have than we have differences.
Ellen, you got 20 seconds.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for the great year with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Allie.
Happy holidays to every one of us. Celebrate and love on each other.
And I think this is when we sing. If Danny could let us sing, we wish you a Merry Christmas. We should. Go for it, Ellen.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. My Spanish is bad.
You know, it's just to know that we're going to be on for another year, going on 15 years. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Yes, ma'am.
And I just want to bring my goodness and my kindness to the world through Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
And
we've done so much good in our time. All I want to do is make a pot of curry chicken, go to the Middle East, and make peace with all the people. That's it.
There we go.
Happy New Year.
Stay tuned. Thank you for joining us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we will see you next year, our family and friends, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on 1510 WWBC each and every Monday.